Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and this is one in our series of pre-system teleseminars introducing our System 2008 faculty. And I have to be making this call from New Orleans, where I'm spending the winter. And this is going to be a very important call. There are going to be a lot of really essential lessons about business and especially about marketing that you're going to hear during this time that we're together. So be ready. This is somebody that I met last year. Like so many people, she approached us interested in perhaps speaking at one of our events. And, you know, I get a lot of inquiries, and sometimes I misplace them, and, you know, sometimes I don't get it. But she was pleasantly persistent, and Bettina, as many of you know Bettina, said to me, you know, you really should read this one, take a good look. And I did, and I'm really glad I did, because I think the material that our guest today covers is just bedrock, fundamental, you know, I don't want to say life and death, but I mean, it's that level of importance. And she's the best person on this topic that I've ever found. And you're going to see why this is such an important topic in a second. So I want to introduce to everybody Ann Convery.
Hi.
Ann, welcome.
Thank you very much. Welcome. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah. And last year, Ann spoke, gave a special presentation to our System Club. The System Club is our alumni group, and we have a special event for them every year, and that's where I bring new people that are doing really interesting stuff, and she was a hit. I mean, people just loved what she had to say, as did I, and I really, I mean, as much as I thought her talk was going to be promising and important, I really saw, you know, it's even more important than I realized. Anne's skill and her specialty and where she is so strong is in teaching people how to develop a hook. Now, what is a hook? Anybody that's ever worked on copywriting knows that you really don't have, and the hook, by the way, is not an elevator speech. That's a whole different thing. An elevator speech is just a quick way to tell people what you do. And that's important. Everybody should have it. That's important. But a hook is something way different. And anybody that's written ad copy and lived and died by their ad copy results knows that you've got about, in my estimate, maybe three, some people say 7 seconds. I think it's 3 seconds. It may be even less than 3 seconds to engage somebody, at least get them to start paying attention. And if you can't do that, you're not in the game. It's as they say in the video game world, it's game over. So the ability to capture people's attention is not only capture it but maintain it is the probably single most important thing in marketing. Intention is like the earth. Attention is like the earth that you walk on. If you're standing on the earth, there's a lot of things you can do. You know, you can plant crops, or you can build a building, or you can dig a canal. There's a lot of options. But if you're not standing on ground, nothing can happen, and attention literally is the ground. So anybody that can help you gain more skill in grabbing and retaining the attention of people is teaching you something absolutely and utterly essential. So, Anne, we're going to start talking about this skill and how you learned it and how you help people and pointers that you have for people.
Okay,
and,
sure.
Yeah, but let's just start with some fundamental things.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we might talk about your background first, because that's something that it's sort of a formula that we follow on these calls. I think it helps people that are listening, you know, to figure out, well, who's sharing this information? I mean, what's their background?
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually get into the information. Tell us a little about how you came to discover this body of knowledge and how you perfected it and how you've demonstrated that it works. And I, by the way, I have done a project with Ann, a very challenging project here, actually, in New Orleans, believe it or not, and very, very significant communications challenge. And Ann has been advising us, and the breakthroughs that we've made are just, they're epic, and we really have to thank Ann a lot. So I have personal firsthand experience that when she's talking about forming a message to grab attention, she really knows what she's talking about. So how did you learn this sort of this magical skill that you've perfected?
Well, I did media training for 18 years, and actually did it because I loved it. It was great fun. And people would come to me, and they would be nervous or terrified and say, I have to go on Channel 7 or CNN, or I have to talk to the New York Times tomorrow, and I don't know what to say, and I can't talk.
So this is called media
training. Mm-hmm.
Maybe this might be new to a lot of people. What exactly? I'm getting a sense of it, but
well,
someone would come to you and say, "Hey, I've my company has gotten me a slot on CNN, or my publicist has got me on the mm-hmm. news, and now, gee, I've got to look intelligent, sound intelligent, and help." Pretty much what you were doing.
Yes, it's pretty much what I was doing. The problem is that I worked with all kinds of people. I mean, doctors and hospital boards and all kinds of people who were going on TV, and you don't really have too much time on television. You probably have about 10 to 12 to 15 seconds to answer a question, and the interview may just be 2 or 3 minutes. So you don't want to drive home in the car thinking, oh, nuts, I didn't say anything of importance. I missed my location. And most people do blow an interview. Many people blow an interview because they sit and wait for the interviewer to lead them to answer the question, to help them look good. And that's not going to happen. It's
gotcha.
Not going to happen.
Gotcha.
So you have to have your three most important points. You have to meet the media's needs. That is essential. But you must also have your most important points and kind of segue back and forth so that you are part of this interview. And part of that is, you know, taking your, 30 years of professional experience and squashing it into maybe one or two emotional 17-second sound bites.
Wow, what a challenge.
Yes, it is.
What a challenge. And TV
yes.
is, I like things that are tested, and that's one of the reasons I like direct marketing so much. You know what your results are,
mm-hmm.
and it's a tough environment. Nobody's giving you anything.
No,
so television, I mean that's like a gladiator situation when it comes to getting attention. People are distracted. They're flipping channels.
Exactly.
So to be able to boil down the essence and the power of whatever it is that one does in 17 seconds.
About yeah.
Wow, and that's your shot. And if you do it right, you've imprinted an important message on maybe millions of people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
Big win. If you do it wrong, it's kind of like a pass in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl.
Yes,
And you gotta get it right. And so you were the person they go to for how many years did you do this?
18, actually.
Wow, and you did this in one of the biggest TV markets on earth, which is L.A.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
But I prepared people for everything, local TV, print, every show, Oprah, CNN, Times, New York Times, LA Times, Today Show, everything.
Gotcha.
Whatever
gotcha.
They needed.
Now, what experience, did you have experience before this in something else that led you to this? Or
well, the funny thing was that there was a PR company and their client, they had gotten a good interview for their client. And she was having a nervous breakdown and refusing to go on. And I had no idea why. I said, I can help her. And I took a VHS, an old VHS camera up, and I worked with her for 2 hours. And after 2 hours, she said, you know what, you should do this. And she went on. She had a great interview. And my second client happened to be the guy, Richard Reardon, who was running for mayor of Los Angeles. Which was again purely coincidence, and so I was kind of off and running before I knew what I was doing. I mean, that's not true. I knew how to put the words in and make them work.
Had you been a writer, or I'm just trying to?
Yeah, I had been a writer. I wrote two nonfiction books, and I'd done a lot of speaking when I was very young, and I knew about the stage, and I don't know why.
Okay.
I don't know why.
Okay. Well, I can see it. I mean, you spend a lot of stage time, and when you're doing that, that's all about, you're either catching the attention of the audience or you're not, and it's visceral. I mean,
yes.
You see it.
Yes.
And so that was a great training, and of course, writing is a great training in clarifying your thoughts and
mm-hmm.
producing two books. You definitely spend a lot of time in the realm of words. So I could see how all these things would meld together. Great. So you discovered this talent, and the world recognized that you had it, and you were off to the races. I want to say something about Anne for people that haven't met her yet. You might think, well, if she can can deal with, you know, Oprah show and, you know, all these big time shows. She must be this really hard charging, you know, brash, you know, in your face kind of person. And Hannah's just like she is on this call. She's, you know, I'd describe you as soft spoken.
Very, yes. No? I think you told me to speak up when I was speaking to the system.
That's true.
Said,
I did.
So,
you know, a lot of us are that way. Not everybody's like the big, brash, you know, slap you on the back kind of, you know, loud, extrovert kind of person. And Anne's a great example of where craft and insight and skill can provide you a tremendous leverage, whether you're, you know, a naturally, you know, outspoken, big voiced person or not. So I find it very encouraging, by the way. Not everybody's a natural ham, I guess.
No, they're not.
Of a better word.
No, they're not.
And sometimes you can feel discouraged. It's like, oh, well, that guy's got natural charisma and I don't, so what am I going to do? Well, if you have some craft and some skill and strategy and tactics and you work something out, you can have more impact than the person who has natural massive charisma. You just have to be smarter.
Yes, and I truly believe that everybody has charisma. Everybody.
Okay.
I do believe, you know Garbo and Dietrich? Well, you sit back when Dietrich comes on the screen because you know you're going to be entertained. She was a real extrovert. With Garbo, you lean in because there's such mystery there. And I think everybody's either one or the other. And if you are, charisma to me is comfort. And if you watch, if you have someone who is so comfortable in their skin and so relaxed, they can set the temperature in the room. They can command the room, simply because they are so comfortable with anything that's thrown them. And you don't need any kind of brazen personality to be charismatic at all.
So in your viewpoint, charisma really has to do with the speaker just being comfortable with themselves.
Yes.
And with the situation.
Completely
and that just sort of, pardon me?
Completely comfortable. And with putting others at ease as well.
Gotcha. Well, that's a very good way to look at it. So that means that any of us, and in charisma, I think anybody that's been around in business for any length of time has seen instances of the power of charisma. It can literally, you know, increase, you know, double, triple, quadruple, quintuple your income.
Oh, it's,
you know,
phenomenal.
Yeah, so this is very encouraging to know that, you know, regardless of where we're starting, we can develop charisma in ourselves. And the key is not learning some wild techniques. It's just, you know, becoming comfortable with ourselves and you know, where we fit in. And excellent. I told us there's just going to be an important call for many reasons. but let's and I also want to highlight the lesson at the very beginning of this call. It took Anne many, many times to get through to us, or through to me. Bettina got the message a lot clearer than I did, sooner than I did. And it was so great that she kept up. I can't tell you the number of people that will throw me a proposal, and they literally throw it to me, or throw it at me, and then they never come back. They never follow up.
Really?
They never, you know, oh, 90, I would say 99 out of 100 people take, like, a random stab, and then they disappear. And guys, the world, that does not work that way. When you're trying to break into something new, you may need to knock on the door 2, 3, 4, 5, a dozen times. And the key, interestingly enough, we've just referred to it, is probably being comfortable with yourself and not feeling rejected and not feeling discouraged and just, you know, try again. Because typically people that have, you know, like in my case with the system, you know, we've kind of got a lot going on. And it may not be that I'm not interested. It just may be that, you know, I just got too much on my plate that day that message came in. So important lesson in persistence there. But let's talk about the fundamental challenge, and we sort of talked around it, but let's go right to it. What is the biggest challenge that business people and marketers in particular face when it comes to telling their story?
I believe that the biggest challenge that they face is that they don't talk in buyer's language. They don't speak in the language that their listeners are conditioned to hear. And, you know, if I'm telling you that I want to, my story, people kill themselves trying to make it interesting, trying to get the right adjectives, trying to convince people, and they don't know, and they feel uncomfortable because it's not working, and they're not, it's really like Russian and Chinese. You're talking to a listener or an audience who has been conditioned to hear certain things. For example, we are conditioned by the media to hear numbers. We're conditioned to hear, to be honest with you, results. I want to hear results, not what you do, but what you have done, what you can do for me. And people make the mistake all the time of talking about, well, here's what I do.
Okay.
It never crosses the bridge. There's no communication takes place. Because the other person is actually kind of waiting to hear. You know, we all really like to buy. We hate to be sold, but we love to buy. And the other person's waiting to hear something that never gets there.
Gotcha. And it sounds like in framing your story, you should just cut right to the punch and, I guess, you know, come up with, you know, your most powerful success story and find a way to put a numerical value to it.
Yes.
And I've seen that. I actually, when you think about it, I'm now thinking of lots of people that I know that do present themselves that way, and I'm realizing, you know, that is very effective.
Well, you can always come out with the features later,
mm-hmm.
after you've hooked me, but the most important thing to me is to get the attention. If you lose attention, it takes three times as long to get it back. Why lose it in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why not grab the person right up front? And I always talk about the lizard brain, but the lizard brain is the amygdala. It's the emotional center.
Okay.
And you want to arouse someone's emotional interest in what you're doing, because mm-hmm. if the message goes into the emotional part of the brain, it will stay there three times, four times as long. You know, that's why Alzheimer's patients can remember songs, and there's a lot of studies on this. And it won't go into the front part of the brain, where it just gets recycled that night in your sleep, and nothing really happens.
Gotcha. You know, I was trying to explain something like this to somebody the other day, and I find myself using an analogy over and over again,
mm-hmm.
and it has to do with the carnival. And in the old days, they'd have different tents, you know, and there'd be different kinds of shows in the tent. And there'd be a guy standing out in front, and his job basically was to catch people's attention and motivate them to go into the tent. And once somebody's in the tent, then, you know, you can have all kinds of shows. You can, you know, get really into different things that otherwise you couldn't, you know, explain in detail. You know, in a few seconds on the midway of the carnival. And you know, it seems like too simple an example, and gee, how could that apply to sophisticated, you know, business practices? But it really is the same. You need to get somebody, your first goal is not to explain everything
to
somebody.
Exactly.
It's get them in the tent.
Yes.
Once they're in there and seated and ready to listen, now you can really go. But a lot of people just they're basically trying to give the whole show out in front of the tent and
mm-hmm.
wondering why people are getting confused and walking by and
mm-hmm.
and not staying. So let's talk about some of the mechanics of the brain too, because I think I've always found knowing a little bit about neuroscience has been unbelievably helpful in my own advertising. And I don't think anybody needs to become a neuroscientist at all, but it is good to have a model or a picture in your mind of how the human brain actually works, because then you can craft your messages to the human brain. Now, you talked about emotion, and we're gonna go back to that in a second. But I want to talk about this issue of attention span, and it's something that we kind of bandy around and we talk about it. But what is attention span? How long is the average person's attention span? Why is this very significant to us as marketers and advertisers?
Well, I have heard that the average human attention span is 9 seconds, and that's the attention span of a goldfish. And
that's not very complimentary to us human beings, but
yeah, I know.
It may be true, though.
Once around the
9 seconds. So
yes.
9 seconds. We'll look at something new for 9 seconds, and then if it hasn't done something to engage us, we're on to the next thing. Is that pretty much what we're talking about?
Yes. And in the last seminar that I went to 2 weeks ago, someone who appeared to know said that it has dropped to 4, which is ghastly. But yes, you were right.
Wow.
We're on to something else.
Okay.
I don't think we pay attention so much as we scan these days.
Okay. And that's if human beings, and I think human beings have always been that way. I don't think it really is a modern phenomenon. However, I do think because of the of television, because of the internet, and because of all these other things, that that tendency in us to scan is just accelerating.
Yes, I think so too.
So the attention, so we're looking at a very short window of time, and in that window of time, the challenge is to, you put it, I think you put it this way, create an emotional experience.
I want to create an emotional experience because when I teach this, I talk about the lizard brain, and what
now,
I mean,
wait, let me just make sure for people here, because it's the lizard brain, like
yes.
the thing that crawls along the ground.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, the ancient brain, the amygdala, the limbic system, the emotional part of our brain, the primitive part that's looking for love, money, and health. That's because we're always looking for that, and if you create an emotional experience, it will stay much longer. It will go into a different part of the brain, and it will wake up that lizard brain, who is always scanning for money, love, or health, and it will have a connection that's extremely powerful, much more powerful than I sell widgets, and this is what they sell for, and they produce this, and they've enabled companies to do that. I mean, that's all facts. That's all features of what somebody's doing. If I can sell you widgets that will enable you to make to increase revenue by 30% without adding any employees, I'm making this up, but
sure.
If I can give you an emotional experience, for example, I can make you more money within 4 to 6 weeks, or I can generate, I can show you how to generate more love. And it could be any kind of love, relationships, corporate relationships. It doesn't have to be romantic. But I can show you how people have done this effectively. Then you're creating an emotional experience. And first of all, the information goes right directly through to the most powerful part of the brain that's going to remember it. Secondly, emotions are going to, if you raise someone's emotions, they're far more likely to be intrigued with you and to come towards you and to be more interested in what you have to sell. And I tell people, you know, you're not selling something, but you are selling yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And people
mm-hmm.
buy you before they buy anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
and if they buy you, they're so much more inclined to buy the things that you have to sell.
Yes.
I see this a lot. I see, if I could go on a sidebar or a tangent here, I see a lot of people, especially newer people to internet marketing, learning marketing formulas and advertising formulas, which are very important to learn, and then they hide behind those formulas as if the formulas alone made everything happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there's a lot of lessons on this call, but I think one of the lessons I hope everyone takes away from this call, and it's something we talk about a lot and probably don't talk about as much as we should, which is that your business will be more profitable and successful and satisfying if you don't hide behind walls and institutional language, and even great, slick, supposedly emotional copywriting can be a wall.
In a way.
Between you and your, you know, it really can. I've seen that. I've seen that many times. Like, a letter is technically perfect. It's
mm-hmm.
like, yeah, it's got a headline. It's a, you know, the headline follows the formula, and it's got bullet points, and gee, it's got a PS, and it's got bonuses, and the letter has no life.
Yes.
Because no human being has put it on the line
mm-hmm.
To deliver the message.
Mm-hmm.
And just a sidebar, but yeah, you really are selling yourself first. And you know, even if you look at these huge companies that, you know, Coca-Cola or, you know, Walmart or any of these things, they all started, you know, now they're big and now they're institutional and so on. But I guarantee you, when they were getting formed, it was the guy or, you know, the gal and whatever the case may be, who was actually up front, out front, being the focus of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the focus of attention for the sake of being a focus of attention, but because people do focus on people and people buy from people. And, you know, as small business people, we really need to keep that in mind. I just wanted to throw that out there. So we're talking about emotion, and emotion is, you know, it's interesting, in the word emotion, you know, is the word motion.
Yes.
And if we're direct marketers, we're really trying to generate activity. You know, we're not trying to. Yeah.
The reason that this is called a hook is because I want the listeners to do something after they've heard it, not just stand there and say, oh, that's interesting. You know, that hurtful phrase, oh my, how interesting. You know someone doesn't care.
You know you're dead.
It's a kiss of death.
Yeah.
And the whole point of this script that I do with people are to get a response. Can I have your number? Can I talk to you more? Can I have your card? And emotion is the carrier that does that, that makes that happen.
Gotcha. Now you point out, I think this is a really important distinction. And I mean, just I love your work because even though you're not a classic direct marketer yet, you know, you're learning that skill.
Working on it.
But even though you're not one of them. You just understand the stuff that makes direct marketing work better than 99% of the people I know that are in direct marketing because you focus on fundamental things. You really do. And one of the key distinctions that you make, and this is so huge, and I want to make sure we cover this in this call. So let's tackle it now. If there's a difference between selling,
mm-hmm.
and hooking.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get into this because this is a million-dollar distinction.
Okay.
And there's a lot of people out there that are telling, and they wonder why no one's buying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that are selling real hard,
mm-hmm.
and they're wondering why they're using all the sales techniques in the book and nobody's buying.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the difference between telling, selling, and hooking?
Well, if I was going to tell, I would say, for example, I'm a realtor. I help people find their dream homes, refinance, or buy investment property. Now, I'm telling you what I do. Those are all features, which I ask people to please stash until later. Selling is much more in your face. It uses the second tense. If you want to buy a house, no matter what your credit history is, I can find you a loan that will get you a home.
Mm-hmm.
That's I'm selling you. And I'm convincing you, and I'm telling you. And if this is an interesting hook. This was used by a guy in a profession who said, if I mention my profession, I clear the room. I cannot tell people what I do.
Okay.
And we came up with this, and I said, what do you do? And he said, well, most people have to work until July until they start making money. I teach people to start making money in 60 days.
Wow. Now, and that's because of taxes, I'm sure.
Yeah. And
now, what is his profession?
He was in insurance. Now, the thing about a hook is that you can't leave them there. You've raised enormous curiosity, but you can't leave them there. You have to follow it up with something. And
mm-hmm.
so, excuse me, when people said, you know, well, what do? Tell me. He would say, I teach people how not to use their insurance. I usually save people from $12,000 to $30,000 in the initial meeting. We've saved our clients over $40 billion in the last 20 years.
And I see you're plugging in those numbers.
Yeah, I sure am.
And you're showing results.
Yeah, I sure am.
Now, this is a case where if somebody was sort of rational, you know, and just told people what he did up front,
mm-hmm.
like you said, he would have cleared the room. Nobody wants to talk to an insurance person.
Yeah, he said, and I've worked with several insurance people, all of whom have said the same thing. If you say the word insurance, I clear the room. And I've got to find another way to say what I do.
So this is another example of where he carefully thought out a hook,
mm-hmm.
And again, to use that analogy, and I think it's apt of the carnival and the tent. He couldn't put if his show was out there in the Midway, it might not have attracted that many much of an audience. So he needed something to say to get them to stop, listen, and come into the tent so they could hear the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that I'm fascinated that you mentioned the carnival on the tent because I just heard of a hugely famous and successful speaker who is hired by large firms for trade shows, and he stands on top of the booth and he talks to the passing people who are passing by.
Oh, really?
He brings so many people into the booth. He's so successful. It's a large part of his very large income.
But what people don't, you know, because, you know, times have changed and we live kind of in a different world. But, you know, not that long ago, you know, there was a time when there was no, you know, when Las Vegas was a little place in the desert and there was really no Disneyland, and there were carnivals all over, and this is how entertainment was conducted. And I don't think people realize how many of a certain generation of entertainers got their start, and business people got their start literally on the boardwalk of Coney Island, you know, and Atlantic City.
Wow.
Did you know that?
No.
You know, for instance, a lot of people laugh at him and say, oh, well, he's just a goof, but everybody remembers Ed McMahon and Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
Well, you could laugh at Ed McMahon, but I don't think you'd laugh at Ed McMahon's bank account.
No.
He assume he's still around. He certainly did very, 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 very well for himself. And he started out as a pitchman on absolutely. Well, absolutely. And so he polished that skill of instantly engaging. You know, we're using the word hook, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we could easily use the word engage. Mm-hmm. You know, he engages people. He learned how to engage people right now, like not warm up and get to the point 15 minutes later.
Yeah.
Hook them. And, you know, when you're on a boardwalk and people have never seen a boardwalk, you know, by the seashore, there's these boardwalks. They're like wooden sidewalks, and people walk up and down the beach. And in the olden days, they don't do it anymore, but there'd be guys selling, you know, kitchen knives and all kinds of crazy stuff. And, you know, it was whoever was the best salesman would go home with the most money. Another example of someone who started in that kind of an environment is the famous and extremely successful direct marketer, Ron Papil.
Oh.
And yeah, I mean, when you see Ron Papil and you see him doing his shtick, which is so successful, well, you're seeing a guy that honed his skill in an environment where people were walking by, and if he was going to grab them, he had to know how to grab them fast. So, and Dan Kennedy, you know, the great direct marketing educator, who so many people have learned direct marketing from, he understands this principle very thoroughly. In fact, I'll tell you a real quick story, and then we'll get back. But it's important. Dan used to be very involved and is still involved to a degree in infomercials, but he was really involved in it years ago. And one day he met some people, clients, and they said, "Well, you know, we've just engaged Francis Ford Coppola to do our next infomercial." And Dan said, "That's great, but I'd rather have a door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesperson as my consultant, because that guy knows how to get people's attention and get in the door and make a compelling presentation. Francis Ford Coppola makes great movies, mm-hmm. but, you know, making a movie and getting someone to buy and make an 800 number call are two different skills."
Wow.
Yeah. So I hope everybody sees this, that you know, you may have to spend a lot of time thinking about your hook and thinking about strategies to engage people. But you know what? If it takes you, like, all day, or if it takes you an entire week, or if it took you a whole month, and I mean, like, sitting there 40 hours a day just trying to figure them out, it'll be the best. I think it's going to be among the best time, effort, investment you ever could possibly make, because, again, attention is the foundation of everything. In marketing, without attention, attention, you've got nothing.
Yeah. Another thing I'd just like to add is that I have a list of 17 reasons why people don't listen.
And 17?
Yeah, and I'm adding to it as we go. But one of the major reasons is I'm looking to have you, not to have you cost me money. So if you come out with your feature, you know, I am an attorney, I am a web designer, my brain instantly goes, got one, don't need you.
Uh-huh.
And we have this lovely fake conversation. And I say, oh, really? How long have you been an attorney? And nothing's happening. You know, absolutely nothing. So there are many reasons why we do not listen. And this is, I always tell this to people because I try to convince them. No one is sitting there as an open book waiting for your message. Nobody, absolutely nobody.
Hmm.
We are busy listening to ourselves. We're closed off. We are defended against being sold. There's tons of reasons, and that's again why I want people to use emotion, because it will cut through anything.
Hmm. This is so important. I think everybody's had the experience of having a conversation with somebody and. you can kind of see them glaze over.
yes.
And being real, they're really being real polite.
And
this could be somebody that really is kind of interested and is a good person. It's not like they're being rude or anything, but they just, you know, listening is an art and not many people have developed it, so we kind of have to help them along.
Yes. Yeah, we do. And we have to get them from listening to taking action.
Right.
In about 25 or 30 seconds.
Well, that's fast, huh?
Yeah.
Hi. That's fast. So tell me about how you've been working with people and how you know, if somebody comes to your door and says, Ann, you know, now, you used to focus exclusively on media situations, mm-hmm. where somebody's going to have a little brief moment on television. But now you're more working with people who have communications challenges, like in marketers, or in the case of the group that we were working with and still work with down here in New Orleans, you know, helping them get their message out,
mm-hmm.
in a world that's not necessarily, not only not receptive, but may even already be turned off. You know, they
yeah.
don't want to hear it anymore. They've already heard it, and there's nothing new there, and let's move along.
Yeah.
And we all face that in our lives, in our businesses, and the things that we're trying to do. So how does the process work when somebody comes to you?
Well, they usually come for a variety of reasons, but the main reason is I can't get through. I'm not getting across. I hate telling what I do. I can't reach people. I have great products.
They're frustrated.
They're very frustrated. Yeah, and what am I saying? You know, how can I describe it? And it's usually this heartfelt attempt by, you know, very intelligent people to describe something. If I could just describe this in really juicy, great terms, people would get it.
Mm.
And what I do is, you know, I'll start out. I will often say, what are your best success stories? Because I want them to throw out the description and give the range of what they have produced for others.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So, and that's
you're looking for that. You're looking for that results.
Yes.
And you know, often, and I know, you know, I know I do it. I bet you do it. We all do it. We go out and do all this stuff, and then we kind of forget half of the good stuff we've done.
I know.
unless we make an effort to document it.
I know. Well, that's one of the reasons on my site I put back this testimonial form, because people are just not so good at getting testimonials, and they're phenomenal. And I want people to remember, what have you done? And people will say, well, I can't really say that, or I don't really know. And you always know. And the thing is that we are conditioned, I think I said this before, but we're conditioned by the media to hear numbers.
Mm-hmm.
If I
mm-hmm.
said, you know, my doctor's fantastic, he's wonderful, he's amazing. And if I said, you know, my doctor's performed 5,000 successful operations with a 92% success rate, and he's got people flying in from three different continents, he's got a waiting list of 6 months, I'm just throwing numbers out. But
well, those numbers are awesome.
I can
feel my brain kind of light up every time you say a number.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I know it's happening.
Yeah, and it does happen, and they work like magic. They're amazing.
Okay. So inventory your success stories would be step one.
Yeah.
And then step two is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, stop labeling yourself. Don't ever say I am.
Because, oh, really?
Yes, because if you say I am a web designer, my brain goes, I've got one, don't need you. I don't
mm-hmm.
tell you this, but I think it. And we have this nice, you know, fake conversation. And however, if I said, what do you do? And you said, well, I've designed two different methods to increase web traffic by up to 35% in 90 days. All of a sudden, you haven't really told me what you've done. And even if I have a web designer and a programmer, I could still be quite interested in you, because you're talking money, which I'm
yep.
interested in. You're not talking web designer or anything like that. So that's what I try to get people to do.
Excellent. Now, in part of the reason for this call, you know, is to raise awareness about System 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that are been following us, or for new people, just a reminder: every year we put together a conference. In the last several years, it's been in Chicago. It's in Chicago this year. It's May 30th, 31st, and June 1st. We're going to have over 25 faculty members This is really unprecedented.
Wow.
You won't find this in other events. We have, in addition to some big general sessions, 25 individual workshops where people can work in relatively small focused groups on very specific business issues. So if pay-per-click is your issue, you'll be in a room with one of the world's leading pay-per-click experts, and you'll have an opportunity really to get into the subject in great depth. If SEO is your issue, copywriting, making video, using video on the internet, on and on and on. Research, which is one of the most important topics in internet marketing, in my opinion. And one of our faculty members in one of our workshops will be conducted by Ann, and Ann's going to be talking in even greater depth about this issue of how to create hooks and how to engage people rapidly on an emotional level so that they pay attention, so they listen.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to, all the workshops are an hour and 20 minutes in length, so obviously you're going to be able to cover a lot more material than we covered on this call. Though I want to point out, guys and gals, you could get a lot of mileage from this call alone if you really work the suggestions that Ann's made today. Now, Ann, you've attended the system. Last year you had an unusual circumstance, and because you not only it was your first system, but you were also a guest speaker.
Yes.
Usually we don't have guest speakers until they've attended at least one, so they understand our approach. But can you talk a little bit for people who've never been to a system seminar, what it was like for you? And again, you're somebody that's been around the block. You've done quite a bit of very high level things in your field. How did the event impact you? What were your impressions of it? What would you say to somebody that hasn't been to a systems seminar?
I would say go. I would say do not pass whatever. Just go.
Okay.
It was the thing that struck me so forcibly was the complete lack of hype or I don't know. I didn't realize that all the other marketing seminars I've been to were so full of hype until I went to the system. And when I say hype, I mean people trying to let you know how much they made, everybody kind of fibbing about their income. No one.
Did you say fibbing?
Fibbing.
Imagine that. You think there are people that might overstate their level of success?
Well,
okay.
And the total frank, open book honesty of all the teachers, of everybody that I met there, it just blew my mind. It was the safest environment I think I've ever found myself in. It was very safe for me to say, I don't know anything about that. You know, and then normally I'm pretty honest anyway, but everybody was saying it. People would come up, I'll never forget Perry Marshall sitting up on the stage, and Perry's like a guru. Perry said, he said, well, I don't know about you, but, you know, I get scared all the time. Every time I raise my rates. And then he said, I don't know about you, but my life's a mess. Which I loved. He said, I'm writing a book. I got a new program. And it was that kind of completely honest communication that made everyone so comfortable. Everyone was so comfortable. And I learned so much because I was learning from people. It sounds crazy, but I was learning from people who had actually done it. There was none of this, you'll make $1 million in 6 weeks. There was none of that stuff.
Yeah.
People,
we have two, you know, simple standards for faculty. Number one, you have to be really good at what you do. Whatever it is that you do, you have to be really good at it in a demonstrable way. And number two, you have to genuinely be interested in teaching people, you know. And teaching, in my opinion, is not putting yourself on a high horse and having, you know, throwing crumbs to the crowd, you know. Teaching is rolling up your shirt sleeves and doing everything you can so that other people can understand what you do so that they can, you know, be good too. And we're very strict on those two standards. I obviously you got to know what you're talking about. But it's not just knowing what you're talking about. It's the attitude that you bring to teaching. And if I'm proud of one thing, it's that we have created an environment where, you know, people that are new, and everybody's new to some aspect of what we do. There's, I mean, even I don't understand everything that goes on at the system anymore. I mean, there was a time years ago when, when I pretty much could grasp every aspect of internet marketing. Well, it's gotten to be too huge a field. I mean, nobody can grasp it all. But I've designed it in such a way so that anybody who wants to learn or improve or even get started is in an environment where everybody and not just the faculty too, but the attendees. You know, we cultivate this. It's a culture of mutual help, mutual respect, encouragement, and one thing that's indisputable. You look at the list of people that have gone through the system as their internet marketing education, and the people that have, you know, you mentioned Perry. Well, Perry was a beginner once.
That's hard to believe.
He was a beginner at the system. And I could reel off a long, long list of people for whom that has been the experience. And I just don't see a lot of that happening in other trainings. I'm sorry, you know, it's not my... And I don't want to promote what I do by pointing out the flaws in what other people do, but to me, if you're an educational institution, which we are, your product, you know, what comes out the factory door, is successful students. And, you know, we objectively, quantifiably, undeniably produce lots of them. And I just don't see a lot of them coming out of other trainings. So, and it's not because we're so great or anything. But it's because we stick to that standard of, number one, I only want people in the faculty that are expert at their skill, mm-hmm. and I only want people who are expert who are also willing to really teach. I mean, just no games, no gurudom, none of that jazz. Just, hey, here's what I know. You can be good at this too. Here's how I broke it down, and let's get you there too. I like that attitude. Yeah, and I like that attitude in you, and that's why, you know, immediately when I understood what you were all about, you know, I was just like, oh, we have to have her as a faculty member.
Thank you.
Yeah. So everybody listened to this call. There was a lot of good content. We're talking about something. I'm telling you, if you can get this attention thing down, this hooking, this ability to hook, the ability to engage, you're 90% of the way to selling. And if you can't get it, you're not even in the door. So this is just fundamental. Anne's one of the great experts on this. She laid out a lot of simple but very powerful methods and approaches in this call. I urge you to listen to it again, because sometimes these simple things go by and you don't really understand the significance of them until you've heard them a few times. Take what she said, work with it. This is one area where I will guarantee results. And again, I'm talking about guaranteeing results from what's on this call. You don't have to do another thing. I mean, obviously, we'd love for you to come to the seminar. It would be great. But if you don't come to the seminar and you actually apply what's on this call, you will see a big change, not only in your business, but in your life, because it's all about engagement with people. So, Anne, I'm looking forward to seeing you in Chicago.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah, I really am. And for everybody, just a reminder, this is going to be May 30th, 31st, and June 1st. And for more information, you can go to thesystemseminar.com. And that's where there's more information about the faculty and, you know, the pricing and you know, the hotel and all that stuff that you need to know. thesystemseminar.com. And Anne Cumbrey, I want to thank you for coming to us in the first place and offering us your knowledge and being so persistent so that I got the message, and then doing such a great session last year, and I know this year is going to be another great session too.
Thank you. The system has changed my world, so it is my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Great. Well, I'll see you in Chicago.
Okay.